genocide. Sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Censorship, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for them more. They shoot, they kill, they massacre brain. They burn the kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgive. Buying time, killing people next in line. Lower classes, social side, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. See their shit, force a bear. Fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill. They massacre, rape, they burn. The kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat right here on UCY.TV, my favorite little online network. It is the 7th of December, and something very bad has happened. My lawn's white. This is terrible news. And I'm told it could stay white till possibly April. This is terrible, terrible news. But hopefully we don't get the 70 centimeters of snow they're talking about. That would be depressing. Anyways, let's see. Where are we going to go here tonight? I might as well knock a couple of... a lot of people, you know... Like, I post a lot on Facebook, and it's a pain, you know, but and what I find very disturbing about this, and it doesn't matter where you post, most Canadians don't want to read anything. I've said this before about Facebook, you know, I can put up a stupid picture of Trudeau or somebody else and put some little dribble on it, and... get all kinds of hits and the most asinine comments. One comment that really bugs the hell out of me is I keep getting people posting. It doesn't matter what I write about, if Trudeau's name shows up in it, way too many people call him an idiot. Now, somebody made up a meme and it was quite nice, but, you know, at the bottom of it said Trudeau's an idiot. And I wrote whoever put it up, and I said, well, you know, that's not correct, okay? Trudeau is a puppet, okay? They pull the strings, he dances. We're the idiots, okay? The general population of Canada, we're the idiots, and make no mistake about it, and we should start calling ourselves idiots, because... we have allowed this to go on for basically ever. This country was set up as a useful tool, full of useful idiots, to help move the global agenda forward. And, you know, people still don't get it. It doesn't matter what party it is, it doesn't matter who the leader is. Canada is a signatory to the UN. So, you know, if you want to look at it in realistic terms, you could look at it as your municipality. I think maybe this will help people understand. Your municipality, according to the federal government, is not really government. It's described as more like a type of business, which it is. And that business was created by the province. And one who creates has authority over what it creates. And the province created your municipality or your city, your town. And those who administer the municipalities are the beck and call of the province who created it. In other words, the one who creates, you can call the parent. And the creation of the parent, you can call the child. And that's exactly the way that this operates between the municipalities and the province. The province is the parent. And the municipality is in the child position and does the bidding of the parent. And that's fact. So people think when they elect a local government, municipal government, or city government, that they're actually electing someone to represent them. Nothing could be further from the truth. They represent the bidding of the province. So, whatever party is in power at the provincial level is what the municipality is. The municipality is an extension of that party because it's in the child position and must do the bidding of the provincial government which created it. And if it refuses to do so, the parent has the right to pull that child out and install another one or another group. And they've done it here. They did it north of me here during the amalgamation in the 90s. And the little town didn't want to amalgamate. And they fought it tooth and nail. And the province just came in and took those people out, installed their own people. So whoever is in your municipal government, they don't represent you. They can't. They don't have the capacity to do so. And they are a type of business. They're a tax collector. It's the same setup as back in the king days. The king claimed all the land, and he ain't got time to run around collect all the taxes, so he goes to his best buddy, the baron or whatever, and says, you know, I'm putting you in charge of collecting taxes. Well, the baron goes, this is a big chunk of ground, so he divvies it up into smaller sections, call them provinces, and then those who are in charge of the provinces divvies it up into smaller sections called municipalities. So, yeah, it's business, and that's all it is. So what's going on with the UN? The UN was put together by some very evil people who don't just want to be in charge of the province. They want to be in charge of the world. So those who created the UN can be looked at as a parent. And everyone that signed on to it can be looked at as the child. And that is why your elected officials do the bidding of the UN, regardless how retarded it is. And that has to stop. We have to grow up. And I said that to my municipal council once. I said, okay, so you're in the child position. Every child has to grow up at some point. And if you have an abusive parent, be it the province or the UN, then you leave. You don't put up with it. Because once you become an adult, you don't put up with crap like that no more. And you're not obligated to put up with that anymore. So I asked my council, you know, these municipalities have been around a long time, they've been in the child position a long time, and everything has to grow up at some point. So how long you plan on staying in the child position. Well, we really don't have a choice. We just have to do what we're told. Actually, no, you don't. Now, I keep saying this, the power is at the local level because that's where everybody lives. Nobody lives at the provincial level. Nobody lives at the federal level. Everybody lives at the local level. That's where the power lays. So we have an opportunity to take that power. But you got to go and get involved. You got to put your 100 smackaroos down on the table and say, I'm running in the election. And it's not so much about winning. It's about the opportunity. It would be nice. I mean, if you ran enough people, you would get majority vote. You know, if your council's 9, you only need 5. And you got the majority vote on every single issue. But you can't get Canadians to do something that simple. They're always looking for somebody else to do it. They read too many comic books. They watched too many hero movies. There are no heroes. You're the hero. And collectively, you're a bunch of heroes. And if you give a damn about the future of your country and your children, you'll get your $100 and you'll put it down. We have a provincial election coming this in 2018 in Ontario. And because if you don't step up to the plate, somebody else will. And then all you're going to get to do is complain again. You don't like what they're doing. Of course you don't like what they're doing, because what they're doing is implementing UN Agenda 2030 now, because 21's all in place. So we didn't challenge them the whole time they were doing that. We didn't shine the light on them the whole time we're doing that. We didn't hold their feet to the fire the whole time they were doing that. Now they're coming in for the final kill, and you know, hopefully some people understand what's at stake here and step up to the plate. For $100, it's the best entertainment you're ever going to buy. I know, because I've run, and the people you're running against are complete dolts. They're simple people. They're stupid people. That's why they're vetted. And they run, they don't know what the hell they're even talking about. Climate change is real, and we have to put in bicycle paths and stuff. Just total brain dead people. And the sad part is we're paying for all this. We pay for all the engineering reports, we pay for all of the consultations, we pay for all the lawyers involved, we pay, and then we complain. But Canadians don't seem to have the capacity to stand up to the plate when it's necessary. And that needs to change quickly. But back to the UN. The UN, you can look at it as the parent. It was created by some very evil people for some very evil purposes. And our country signed on to this nonsense. They never, ever, ever explained to the people what the hell the game is. Okay? Which means that your government I don't even see how they have the authority. I certainly didn't give anybody the authority to go hang out with a bunch of satanic UN globalists that want to take control of every minute of my life and every resource in my country. I don't recall anybody in government ever saying, hey, folks, you think this is a good idea? You know, just take it up the ass. So, you know, they never informed anybody, so I don't know that any of this stuff even stands. But the fact of the matter is that, again, regardless of what party it is, they're pushing this agenda without telling you. The media is pushing the agenda without telling you. Your churches are pushing the agenda without telling you. Your schools are pushing the agenda without telling you. Your unions are pushing the... and it just goes on. The universities, holy crap, look out there. You know? Sent my really bright kid to university, come back, an unholy, satanic, amoral Marxist. But they got a certificate. We got to cut the UN loose. Now, we have people here in the country, they want to get rid of the liberals. I'm up with that. They want to replace the liberals with the conservatives. But they're not conservatives, okay? All parties in this country are liberal, including the conservatives. Because anytime you add something to a word, you change the meaning of the word. So we now have not the conservatives, but we have the progressive conservatives, and progressive is liberal. So you're going to go to the polls in 2019, I guess, and you're going to choose which globalist, liberal, amoral party you're going to vote for. That's just plain stupid. So you got the progressive conservatives, you got the liberals, you got the NDP, which are members of the Socialist International. You've got the Green Party, and the leader of the Green Party is actually an American lawyer. I don't know how you can be born outside the country and end up the leader of a political party in this country. I have no idea how that works, but it did. Now, Elizabeth May, who is the leader of the Green Party, is a signatory to the globalist agenda, and hung out with Gorbachev and Morris Strong and Rothschild. So all parties are pushing the globalist agenda. And if you want proof of that, all you have to do is go to the United Nations Parliamentary Assembly site, the UNPA, and you will find members of all stripes and all colors are members of the UNPA. We have senators, politicians, professors, and so on and so forth, all members of the UNPA pushing for United Nations Parliamentary Assembly, which is a world government. But yet, people just want to bitch and complain about who's in power today. It doesn't matter who's in power today. It doesn't matter who was in power before, and it doesn't matter who's in power after. They're all pushing the same damn UN globalist agendas. And that's not disputable. So if you want to turn the tide of where our country's going to, then you must step up to the plate. You must become involved. And if you're not prepared to be involved, then you best go sit your kid down on the couch and say, you know what, Timmy or Sally, I really love you, and I know what's up, but Daddy and Mommy, well, we're spiritually weak. We're weak of the mind, and we're weak of the spine, and we're just going to ride this out till we die. Hopefully we don't get bitch slapped before that, but nah, you little kid, you're on your own. And it's probably not going to be a happy life, but we're too weak to do anything about it. And that's really a sad, sad situation. Now, if I can find this thing, this really irritates the hell out of me if I can find it. And if I can't, I thought I had this loaded up before. I did, but I lost it. So I'll see if I can't dig it up again. There's, what the hell? Where is what I'm looking for here? Uh, No, let's see if I can get this right. Well, here's an interesting headline in Canadian politics on the CBC, better known as the Communist Broadcasting Corporation here in Canada. Canadian veterans significantly more likely to commit suicide, study says. These are the same guys that were trying to get their pensions reinstated and got given the middle finger. And I had a veteran on here on the show, and these veterans are treated like, well, garbage. That's just the way it is. So, I'm looking at a story about some indigenous people who and I can't remember what paper I saw that in. But I'm going to look at the Canadian veterans here for a second. And it's too bad, you know. Hopefully the veterans will join up with the people and challenge the military and challenge the RCMP and challenge the political. The federal government has, for the first time, taken an accurate statistical snapshot of the level of suicide among veterans. The benchmark analysis released Thursday by Veteran Affairs Canada confirms the long-held suspicion that former soldiers, both male and female, are more likely than the general population to take their own lives. It's an incomplete portrait, according to some in the veterans community who have been pushing for this kind of research for years. Still, the numbers are stark. Men who served in uniform have a 36% higher risk of suicide than those in civilian life, according to the study, which examined the records of 200,000 ex-members over a 30-year period, 37-year period between 76 and 2012. Those at the highest risk were young men under the age of 25. They were 242% more likely to end their life. Are you serious? 242%. That's higher than transgenders. For women, the data is even more alarming. They have an 81% higher risk of dying by suicide compared with the female general population. The figure tracking women, however, were somewhat limited by the sample size. Interestingly, the likelihood of suicide among female veterans was higher between 83 and 2012 than it was in the previous decades. It was a complicated study. The study is significant because the federal government had been unwilling until just recently to undertake the complicated task of cross-referencing Veteran Affairs, National Defense and Statistics Canada data to track suicide among ex-soldiers. While the military has tracked suicides within the ranks for years, developing a snapshot of life and death after service has been hampered by the fact veterans fall under provincial health systems. It is also important because it comes just weeks after the Liberal government released a joint suicide prevention strategy involving both the veterans and the defense departments. The Veteran Suicide Mortality Study is an important step in better understanding suicide within the veteran community, Veteran Affairs Minister O'Regan said in a statement. It complicates existing strategies, said, and gives us greater perspective as we continue to build better services and support. Aaron Bedard, a former combat engineer who served in Afghanistan, said the study is lacking because the data ends in 2012, just as the suicide crisis kicked off. This is just very vague and topical, Bedard said, told CBC News. It's just a generalizing it. Those missing years in the study have been the worst in terms of former soldiers taking their own lives, he added. What's needed better set is more research between 2012 and 2017 with a commitment to developing ongoing real-time data on future cases. The Joint Suicide Prevention Strategy does contain a pledge to track suicide and to evaluate how well programs are working. He also wants the Veterans Department to cross-reference the most recent data with its client list in an effort to determine how effective its existing suicide prevention strategy has been. This is something veterans officials have been reluctant to do. They have moved the yardsticks about an inch with this study, he added. We're having to drag them into some onus here. As the suicide crisis unfolded in 2013, Better said the reflex of the Defense and Veterans Departments, as well as the former conservative government, was to downplay the issue, deny there was a problem, and blame the media for reporting on it. The new study completely avoids answering uncomfortable questions about that time and what is going on today. So, you know, we have these men and women who went off to, they thought, war to, you know, save the nation when nothing could have possibly been further from the truth. Meanwhile, they come home, they have their disability pensions taken, a lump sum that is obviously not tied to inflation, which means the money they were lumped becomes of less value every day they have it, whereas the pensions would have been indexed. But, you know, we don't have any money for the veterans. I saw a video last night of a guy going down the road in Surrey, B.C., and we used to live just outside of Surrey, and this guy couldn't believe it. You know, he was coming home from work and he took a shortcut because there's a liquor store down there he likes to visit. And he came around the corner and it was nothing but like Tent City. But it wasn't in a park or something or in a bush. It was on the freaking street beside the sidewalk. That little space between the sidewalk and the road. And this guy's driving down this road in Surrey, B.C., and the number of tents on that street is freaky. It's really freaky. When we lived in BC, the idea of homeless people, except down in the hardcore in East Hastings and Vancouver, where the drug addicts and the drunks hung out, you didn't see homeless people. And now, all the way out, headed towards Hope from Vancouver, they have crisis everywhere. So, the people in this country, including the veterans, are getting the short end of the stick here. And we have 300,000 plus immigrants, migrants, refugees, whatever the hell you want to call them, flooding into our country every year. And you're on the hook for it, just like you'd be on the hook for the veterans' pensions. But I think being on the hook for the veterans' pensions would be a lot more palatable to people than being on the hook for the expenses of these migrants coming in here, mostly Muslim, who are here to take down our nation. I think average mom and dad would be much more sensitive to forking up for the veterans, other than those who are coming to this country and who are bringing nothing with them. Expenses. So these are things that we have to deal with. We can't shy away from it. it's what it is, and it's just going to get worse. Now, oh, here's the story I was looking for. Now, this really shines light on today, this story. And it's called When Sorry Isn't Enough. This is a residential school survivor, Toby Obed, has been through a lifetime of pain. And he says, what good is a government apology? And I agree with him, 100%. But this guy's story is so sad, but it reflects on what's going on in our society today. It's like looking in the mirror. I'm going to try and explain that as I read through this thing. Toby Obed has fought for a decade to get to this moment. A formal apology from the Prime Minister for what residential school survivors in Newfoundland and Labrador went through. The apology is part of a $50 million class action settlement agreement between Ottawa and residential school survivors in Newfoundland, Labrador. But now that he is poised to share a stage with Justin Tinkerbell Trudeau in Happy Valley Goose Bay on Friday, Obed isn't sure he will be able to accept it. There's a quote from Obed. I'm the one that is going to be accepting the apology on behalf of all the residential school survivors in Labrador, or in Newfoundland, Labrador. I'll be the one who will say, yes, we accept it, or no, we don't, Obed said. And if I don't like his words, no, I'm sorry. I'm not taking the apology. Now, I really like his attitude. Because too many people put in that position will just fold and not say what's on their mind. And I'm a firm believer that you must say what you mean and mean what you say. We got to stop folding up to these stupid politicians and that. Anyways, Obed's skepticism is built up like scar tissue after years of abuse, neglect, exclusion, and litigation. It has taken generations to get to this moment. Justin's father, Pierre, was prime minister when Obed was sent to residential school. After years of waiting for this opportunity, Obed doesn't know what he's going to say to Trudeau. I think the first thing I would be saying is that it's about effing time that I get my apology, said Obed. Now, I can seriously see myself actually getting in his face and saying that. The healing has been so difficult, in part because the struggle has lasted so long. Obed is now 45 years old, and the best years of his life may have been the very first few. Obed was 3 years old when the government officials knocked on the front door of his home in Hopedale on Labrador's north coast and told his parents they were taking the children. It was 1975, and Obed and his brother and two sisters were loaded onto a float plane and taken more than 200 kilometers south to Northwest River. Once there, they were enrolled in the Yale School and Dormitories, a residential school run by the, here's that word again, International Grenfell Association, who I haven't looked up yet, and I should. I haven't never heard of them before, but I know they're up to no good. It is supposedly a charitable organization that provided health and education services to Labrador and northern Newfoundland. By the time he was six, Obed was fending off abusers and molesters. All the craziness started happening, Obed said. You had to learn quick how to defend yourself. Obed says the abuse initially came from older students in the school and the dormitories, many of whom were repeating a cycle of abuse that had been inflicted upon them. He says he also was also beaten and physically abused by teachers and staff. Obed doesn't like to discuss specific details of what happened, but it involved sexual violence. These are little kids, folks. This was his life until the school closed in 1979. At that point, the 8-year-old Obed was thrown into a world of foster care. For the next 8 years, Obed bounced from foster home to foster home, from community to community. He said he switched homes and towns about 19 or 20 times. The abuse that started in the residential school in Northwest River didn't end in the foster system. He said it became even worse. Having to live with white people, do what they do things the way they do. You do this, you do that, you say this, you say that. If you don't, you get beat, he said. You get beat and you get strapped and you get punished. And do what you're told and don't speak back. If you say anything, you go to your room, you don't have no supper. It was constant. By the time the system spit him out at 16, Obed was broken. He returned to Hopedale, the product of forced re-education and re-engineering, abuse and neglect, and started drinking heavily. Now, this is basically what is happening to the children today. Okay, the education the children are getting in the schools today is about removing your culture from you, just like they did to the native children. It is about mental abuse, and in some cases physical abuse, and in some cases sexual abuse. I mean, the senior policy advisor for education or sex education, early sex ed education, the senior policy advisor for the curriculum turns out to be a pedophile. So what we're seeing here, and history does repeat, because those who are writing the history and control the history are the same ones that screwed with the Indian children. And now they're screwing with your children. And you know that's true because if you look at the data on the percentage and the exponential rise in children who are suffering mental problems, stress problems, they've got the kids so screwed up now they don't even know what gender they are, for crying out loud. Then that's abuse. And it's not really any different than what they did to the native children. I became an alcoholic, Obed said. Now, we have an awful lot of young people that are so strung out on pharmaceuticals and street drugs. It's pathetic now because they broke them. That was my way to cope, he said. Get drunk, and try to drown out all the garbage and everything else. Obed spent years in a haze of alcohol and despair until one night in Happy Valley, Goose Bay, January 1993. After some heavy drinking with a friend, the 20-year-old Obed staggered outside and fell asleep in the snow. It was minus 50 and he was only wearing a light jacket. When he was found the next morning, Obed's liver and kidneys were frozen. The frostbite was so severe, doctors had to amputate his feet as well as his left arm below the elbow. He was in a coma for 2 months. When he finally woke up, Obed found himself in a hospital in St. John's. He was confused about what had happened and shocked by what he had lost. When I first woke up, I called the nurse. Told CBC reporter back in 93, I looked at my arm and I said, where's my arm? I want my hand back. I looked at my feet and he said the same thing. The experience in Newfoundland Labrador residential school survivors is similar to that of thousands of Indigenous people across Canada. The difference is that Obed and others had to wait an extra 9 years to hear the government say it was sorry when Prime Minister Stephen Harper apologized to survivors of the residential school system in 2008. He excluded more than 1,000 people from Newfoundland and Labrador. The rationale was the schools there existed prior to the province joining Confederation in 1949 and thus weren't created under the Indian Act, so the federal government wasn't liable. It was a slap in the face to all of us here in Labrador, Obed said. It's all we ever wanted, to hear the apology from the federal government, the residential school survivors in Labrador. They weren't just excluded from an apology, they were also excluded from the compensation. Well, the Harper government agreed to pay $1.9 billion to the initial group of 80,000 residential school survivors. Newfoundland and Labrador students would get nothing. So in 2007, when it was clear he was being left out of the national settlement, Obed became one of the lead plaintiffs in a class action suit against the federal government seeking an apology and $50 million in compensation. The central argument was that Ottawa owed those students the same duty of care once the province joined Confederation. Trudeau government agreed to settle the case in September 2016. The settlement prompted a clinical division of compensation that paints a gruesome picture of what happened in the residential schools. In order to calculate individual settlement payments, lawyers drafted a chart. Now, this is really sick. This whole story is really sick. And the problem is that no one in the government is ever held accountable. Because when I researched back where we got our so-called government from, it was said that we were given, we didn't create, we were given responsible government, but the word responsible and responsible government doesn't have the dictionary meaning of the word responsible. And when you look at who the responsible party is, it's us. We're the surety for the debt. We're the collateral for the debt. We're the ones that are chargeable, liable, and accountable, not the government. And that's got to change. Anyways, this part here is really sick. The lawyers came up with this. Eh? Woe on ye lawyers, or Shakespeare said, or the villagers in the 1200s that tried to accomplish. When they figured out who these people were, these lawyers, they went after them and killed a hell of a pile of them, and judges, which are lawyers, because of the corruption. Same thing here. Okay, so in order to calculate individual settlement payments, lawyers drafted a chart outlining the range of compensation for specific abuses. Now, it starts out at $50,000 for one or more instances of fondling or kissing, or if nude photographs were taken of the survivor. So these lawyers came up with this. They thought that was pretty good. You get 50 grand if you're a kid, or some adult in a school was fondling, kissing, or taking nude photographs, you get 50 grand. The compensation grows as frequency and severity of the violations increase. It caps out at 200 grand, which comprises four or more instances of anal or vaginal intercourse or penetration with an object. Obed received the maximum. You know, all these different people took little bits and pieces. And when you're the target, that's it, Obed said. Now, the residential school problem's been going on like forever. And these people have been abused generation after generation after generation. And now it's going to be 2018 and a few weeks. And the same garbage is still going on today. You know, all the way up to 1974, I think it was, 74, I believe it was 74, 73, 74, in Alberta, Canada, they were still forced sterilizing people. Those with, you know, not full mental capacity, Native people, Native women in particular. Playing the old genetics card. That's all the way up into the 70s. Like I said, it's the end of 2017. This garbage went on all those years. And you can't fix. No amount of money. And no apology is ever going to fix the problem. The fact is, the government knew this was going on because they set it up. But no government official has ever been, not that I'm aware of, has ever been held accountable for these disgusting deeds. Well, we'll just apologize and give them some money. It's not coming out of our pocket anyways. And this is the problem in this country. You know, the apology is hollow, and you're paying the bill. And those, you're paying the bill, you're compensating for the damage done, although you didn't cause the damage. Because we are held in the responsible position, not the government. The government's in the irresponsible position because they're not liable, chargeable, or accountable. And that's been proven over and over and over and over again. And that has to change. But what they're doing to the children in the schools today is not unlike what they did to the children. I mean, they got the power now that if a teacher convinces little Johnny or little Sally that, well, maybe you're not really a boy or maybe you're not really a girl, and they work the shit out of them. And then little Johnny or Sally goes home and tells mommy and daddy, you know, I'm not really a boy, I'm a girl, or I'm not really a girl, I'm a boy. And the parents go, what are you talking about? You're only like 7 years old or less. They say that, you know, you say, that's just plain stupid. Like, maybe you like to play with dolls more than baseball right now, but you get over it. But if little Johnny and Sally go back to school and tell the teacher, you know, we went home, we told mommy and daddy that we're not the right gender or the right sex. The state now has the power, just like it did over the Native children, to go to your home and take your children away from you and place them in a transgendered household. And there ain't jack shit you can do about it. And those children will be broken. Just like Obed here in this story. The story goes on a little bit. While the money received won't make the pain go away, Obed said the settlement offers some hope. He plans to buy a house. For years, he's been effectively homeless, spending a fair bit of time sleeping on a cousin's couch. Most recently, he's been staying in an assisted living facility. Since he was taken from Hopedale at age 3, Obed has lived in many houses, but he's never had a home. And you can hear the excitement in his voice when he talks about finally having a place of his own. I'm actually looking seriously to look at a house to buy. This is something that I've always wanted to do, he said. Now that I'm somewhat financially stable, I can do it. But you still, he's not going to get over this. Okay? He's been abused, stolen from his family, the age of 3. He said, I'm just going to effing drink, and when I'm tired of drinking, maybe I'll stop. The apology ceremony with Trudeau is being held in an art center about 40-minute drive from the residential school in Northwest River. Obed will take the stage, both triumphant and damaged. He has won his apology, but his injuries from that night in the snow have left him disabled. He's lost his language, his culture, in contact with some of his family. He hasn't seen his younger sister, Sarah, in person in 37 years when they left the residential school and were separated, each plunging into the foster care system. Obed still drinks, and he doubts he will ever stop. I tried treatment, I tried counseling, and all that craziness. And it only made things worse. So I said, F it. No more treatment centers, no more counselors, no more bullshit like that. I am going to just F and drink. And when I get tired, maybe I'll stop, but that's not where I am right now. Obed still harbors bitterness over being excluded from the initial apology, a feeling that hasn't abated with a change in government, a seeming change in approach to Indigenous affairs. Obed is skeptical Trudeau's reconciliation agenda. Well, of course, because that's a UN agenda. And the Native people really need to look into the reconciliation agenda and the Indigenous rights out of the UN, okay? Because they're coming for your land. Make no mistake about it. The globalists want the native lands, and they want all the land that the natives aren't on. So, yeah, you ought to be skeptical about Trudeau's reconciliation agenda, calling it just another word that they are trying to make fancy. See, the native people are really quite smart. You know, he gets that. He's not excited. Oh, boy, it's a reconciliation program. They care about us. No, he knows it's just propaganda, nonsense, to move somewhere that he's not sure of where it is yet. But bad enough after all these years that we've been left on our own to deal with our own demons and everything else, he said. Now we have to deal with reconciliation, just another big old word. Underscoring all this residual anger is the fact that many of the survivors who were part of Obed's class action settlement might not be there when Trudeau formally apologized. The federal government is only paying for about 50 people connected to the lawsuit to attend the ceremony in Happy Valley, Goose Bay. But they are going to pay for 300,000 migrants per year rolling into this country, but they can only cough up enough money to pay for 50 people connected with the lawsuit. Obed says the decision to limit the travel subsidies primarily to people who testified in open court will keep many residential survivors away. The only way to get a Happy Valley Goose Bay from the isolated Inuit towns on the coast is by plane, and flights routinely cost more than $1,000. Whoop-de-doo. Look at the amount of money that's coming out of your pocket going overseas to fund UN agendas through so-called government. But they can't cough up $1,000 a head to go to this apology ceremony. His brother and two sisters were part of the class action settlement, but they never testified in open court. So they didn't get a plane ticket. That means Obed's sister, Sarah, who lives in Ontario with her teenage daughter, won't be there. I was 8, she was 7. That was the last time I see her. I would love to see her. I would love to see my niece, he says. I'm going to be without my family again. Happy Valley Goose Bay was chosen for logistical reasons, but it means hundreds of Inuit survivors who would have to pay out of pocket and leave their homes to hear an apology. It's also not on Inuit Island. Happy Valley Goose Bay is the biggest town in Labrador, but it's a white settlement that wasn't even founded until the Second World War. I will put it, it will put a damper on my day, Obed said. Even so, hundreds of survivors are expected to attend the apology. The arts center will be full. The adjoining high school will have a video feed to handle any overflow. Obed may not know if he will accept the prime minister's apology, but he is certain of the impact he wants it to have. We've been fighting our battles and demons and all this craziness all these years in our lives, a lot of it stemming from the residential schools and everything else, and now it's time to heal, Obed said. Now it's time to say, okay, let it all rest, let the inner child rest. Let's grow up now. Let the adult be the adult. You know, when I talked to that Native woman, I've said this so many times, when I talked to that Native woman, I asked her if she understood the plan for Whitey, meaning basically everyone else that's not Native. And she looked at me and quietly nodded yes. And I asked her how she come... she understood it so easily. I'm trying to explain to Whitey, like beating her head on the wall. And she just looked at me and quietly said, we lived through it. Now it's your turn. And the people of this nation had better wake the hell up and quickly. The government does not care about you. If they did care about you, they would be responsible. But they're not responsible. They put everything on your backs, and now they're taking your children again. I mean, I was all lied through school, and I was in a normal white school. But what they're doing to the children today is over the top. It is extremely close to what they did to the residential children. You know, when I had Christian on, Chris's son, and that blew me away that they have a no-touch policy. You can't even touch each other. This is mental. This is child abuse. Everything they do in the schools is child abuse. And we have to change that because it's our duty to do so. We cannot continue to wander around with a blind eye. Anyways, I think we're about out of time. Everybody have a good evening. We'll be back Saturday night over on Revolution Radio, and may or may not have a guest, but we're going to be there for 2 hours, 10 o'clock till midnight. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in, listening to the show. And remember, this is important stuff. It's not about you and me. Okay, it's about the future of the nation. And we have a duty to take our nations back from the sick, psychotic, take care. Anyway, there's the story. Lower classes, social slack, they don't matter, genocide. Sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care. Caesarship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for